This is where normal comes to die. Mediocrity meets its final demise, and the status quo is unabashedly dismantled. Welcome to Reinvention Radio. Now, here's your host, Steve Ulscher.
And good afternoon. How you doing, Mary?
Doing great.
Awesome, awesome, awesome. Another beautiful day here. And actually, it gets even more beautiful because we got Margie in the studio today, right?
Yes, we do.
We got Margie in the studio. Margie Grace, awesome. Welcome, welcome, and hello to all of our Periscope folks. We are live and well, or at least we're alive.
We are alive, yes.
I don't know about how well, at least I can speak for myself. I don't know how well I actually am, but that's just kind of par for the course in my world, as you know by now, Mary. You just never know what hail storm you're going to be walking into. It's like, I'm just going to be known as Hurricane Steve, I think, from this
there you
point.
Go.
Has there been a Hurricane Steve, by the way?
No, I don't think
we got to start that.
Yeah.
I'm going to officially start that. I'm going to be Hurricane Steve.
Can they just,
Steve.
Like, pull names out of a bucket full of names and say, okay, the next hurricane's going to be called?
I just feel bad for the kids or the adults who get, like, the really bad hurricanes, you know, because, like, how are you ever going to go anywhere ever again and not have someone reference that hurricane? What were the big? There was a big one that hit Texas, right? There was Katrina.
Katrina,
right? So Katrina nailed New Orleans, right? And then there was it Bertha or Betsy or Boobies or what? One of those that like took down Florida.
Oh,
I don't know.
Yourself, Marjorie.
I know, Yeah. Do we call you Marjorie or Margie?
I go by Margie.
See, she goes
Margie,
by Margie.
Okay.
All right, we don't have to be that formal.
But Marjorie's my author's name.
It is, and it's so awesome to have you here. We're gonna have some fun. Definitely. As a matter of fact, it kind of plays into what I wanted to talk about here as we look to reinvent drug addiction, as I called it. I know you had a different name for it. And, you know, I think it was eventually, I think originally we were going to reinvent grace, like reinventing grace, that sort of thing.
Reinventing grace, yes.
Yeah, well, I kind of take it to a different level there. So we ended up going with reinventing drug addiction.
Okay.
Which is definitely something that is prevalent and scary. I have to admit this, and I'm almost embarrassed to say it. My wife and I are just now getting into the whole Breaking Bad thing. Did you ever watch that whole series?
I think I watched one episode and I was like, this is kind of disturbing.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's like...
I don't want to be disturbed in my daily life any more than I already am.
Oh.
So I don't want to plunk myself in front of that.
I've never watched it.
Margie, you've never seen
no.
it? Oh, man.
Mm-hmm. I don't watch disturbing things.
Yeah.
Well,
and you're about to learn why.
Well, you probably won't stick around too long in this room then. Because, I mean, with Richard back there doing his thing on Periscope and Wade doing his thing. This gets to be a very, very disturbing room. Not to mention Kelly, of course. And we know how disturbed Kelly is.
That's okay. I can handle all of you.
Well, given what you've handled in your life, there's no doubt you can handle all of us. I just wanted to share something because I know that we're going to be talking about drug addiction and the epidemics and everything else that, I mean, really plague far too many young people. And actually, you lost a son, and we're going to talk about that to overdose.
Yep.
And we are going to talk about that. But I just actually read an article, and you know me, occasionally I read, Mary. So I read. It's congratulations. So
yes.
I read the other day.
You always surprise me.
That's the thing is, like, I think you come here just to hang out, not because, like, I know how much you love radio, and it's like, you know, I know it's a love for it, but I think mostly you come just because you never know what's going to happen. So it's like,
it's always an experience, which is great.
It is always an experience. Exactly. All right. So here's a question for you. Let's play a game. You know, I like playing games. Okay. So here we go. So take a guess. In 2013, are you cheating? Are you looking at this? You're not looking.
No, I don't know what you're looking at.
Okay, good. All right. Here we go. So, all right. In 2013, let's play a game. Guess how many, as a percentage of the population, guess how many children lived below the poverty line in 2013? Any guesses?
Well, let me think. Nationwide.
Nationwide. By the way, do you know what the Department of Human and Health Services official poverty line is? Do you know what that number is? Any
20?
Ideas? Close. Margie, do you know? Are you cheating? You're googling over there.
Yeah.
No, you're not going to find. You have this in your notes, really? Like, this is something you talk about. Yeah. All right. Do you know what the poverty line is?
I haven't talked about it in a while. It's pretty bad. It's,
All right. Mary's close.
I want to say, like, over 50%. Is that?
Oh, you're doing the children thing. You're doing the children thing. Okay.
Yeah.
So, here, let's back up. So, the poverty line is defined as anyone making less than $23,000.
Well, that was close.
$624. Now, if you make $23,625, you're fine. You're just rolling.
you're one of the middle class?
Yeah, exactly. You join the middle class.
Buck.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, so that's just like living large. Okay, so percentage of children living in the U.S., this is just U.S. only, below the poverty line, 22%. 22%. So one out of every
five.
Thanks, Mary.
Sorry.
Yeah.
4.5.
4.2, 4.6. All right. So 22% of children living below the poverty line. Frightening. And do you know that there are, so basically it's frightening because there are 18. So that here's how it equates out, right? It equates out to 18.7 million kids. 18.7 million kids.
Does it say where?
Yeah, I actually got that as well because, you know, I think a lot of what we're going to talk about today in reinventing drug addiction, I think some of that starts with what you experience as a child. I mean, you know, you kind of go to the extremes, right? I mean, you got the well-to-do kids who just have never had to work for anything in their life.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're just spoiled rotten and they've got this anti-mommy, anti-daddy thing, you know, whatever going on. And so they're rebellious, right? So they turn to all of these drugs and this, that, and the other and, you know, turn into assholes basically because, you know, they've had it too good.
Right.
And then you've got the kids on the full other end of the spectrum who I think frankly feel like they have nothing to lose because they have nothing to gain out of life. And then you have that segment as well. And so I'll be curious, Margie, as we go through this, and I'm not sure, I don't want to play, you know, statistics with you here, but if you have any sort of statistics around, you know, poverty, low, middle, upper class kind of stuff, I'd be curious to see how the drug addictions kind of break down line by line.
Well, and you were saying living below the poverty line is not just because of drugs, it's because of, you know,
I'm just wondering if there's a correlation. So I'm not saying necessarily that those who are in poverty are addicted to drugs, but I bet you there is a correlation.
So just by chance, I have 35 backpacks and blankets and toiletries in the back of my car to take down to stand up for kids.
See? There we go.
The homeless teen center that's open 4 hours a day from 4 to 8 so these homeless teens can come off the street and take a shower.
Yeah.
Be able to look at the internet. And so my...
So what's the name of the organization you're taking it to?
Stand Up for Kids and Switchfoot did the Bro-Am or whatever they call it.
Okay, right.
At Moonlight Beach.
Yeah.
They... Stand Up for Kids is one of their causes that they donate money to, that they fundraise for.
Nice.
And so I created this thing at my church that the moms that are in the prayer group, we gathered 35 backpacks to give to them so they can put some stuff in, you know?
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. So today we're going to be talking about drug addiction. We're going to be talking about other factors that lead to drug addiction, et cetera. I can tell you from personal experience, yes, I've done a lot of drugs. I can certainly say that from personal experience, but also from personal experience in my family, we've had issues, and I think there's probably not a family on this planet that probably hasn't had some sort of issue with drugs. And
Yes, on the way here, I heard in the news that 50% of Americans have smoked pot.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm all 50%, so that's great. Absolutely.
It's
so
just, half. You're right. Your average.
Okay, so half of you, Mary, has smoked pot, and the other half of you has not. So it just depends on the day, basically. Yeah.
And that was since the 1969 they first took a poll.
Wow. And the year I was born. So there you go. See, that's the exact year that they should have started that discussion. All right. So if you want to join in on the conversation, as you know, this is a live radio show until we, you know, record it and then put it on as a podcast. But right now it's live at 866-977-2346 is our number, 866-977-2346, and hit number 1. And we'd love to have you join the conversation. But I want to just finish this about the whole poverty thing. So, you know, it's interesting because it's a lot closer than I would have thought. But there are three primary groups of those who are in poverty. Let's just break it down by race. So if you had to guess, as a percentage of U.S. children by race whose families were living below the poverty line, what race do you think would have the most children living under the poverty line by race?
I would say African American.
Any guesses?
It sounds like a trick question.
No, it's African American. So there you go. Yeah. No trick to that at all. But
you know what's really bad is that it's almost like seems obvious.
I know.
Which is really bad to say.
It is. And what surprised me actually was the second group of people. And this one I don't know if you'll know. Any guesses on who would fall into second place on that as a percentage?
American Indian.
Wow, you are good.
I'm good.
Oh my God. All right, let's go. That's like so impressive. Did you know that? Margie, you knew that.
I didn't. I was thinking, well, I was maybe Hispanic.
That's number three.
Okay.
American Indian. I was raised in Minneapolis.
Yeah.
And Minnesota's huge.
True.
Yeah.
Very. I mean, I didn't know. I think I knew one African American and I knew a zillion.
Well, here's what's really interesting, and we'll talk more about this after the break, but in the state-by-state analysis that they did, Minnesota actually took the top spot for overall child well-being.
Really?
Wow.
So isn't that interesting? Minnesota actually took the top spot. So
As in good.
So there you go.
I hail from there.
You do. So your fellow people are onto something there. So, all right, look, we got Margie Grace in-house. 866-977-2346 is our number. We'll be right back with Reinvention Radio.
One person has the power to change the world, impact millions of lives, and leave a legacy for lifetimes to come. That person is you. In the New York Times bestseller, What is Your What?, Steve Ulcher, award-winning author and founder of the Reinvention Workshop, reveals his proven process that has helped thousands of men and women discover, share, and monetize the one thing they were born to do. Grab your free copy now at www.whatisyourwhat.com/free. That's www.whatisyourwhat.com/free.
And now, back to Reinvention Radio with your host, Steve Ulcher.
All right, welcome back to Reinvention Radio. This is your host, Steve Ulcher, along with Mary Goulet. Hey, Mary.
Hey, Steve.
I didn't even officially, like, announce you in the first segment. You should slap me, like, when I don't, like, officially say Mary Goulet is in the house. I give you full permission.
All right.
See, and
now I'm going to take that to heart.
Did you ever see? Here we go. So you know my Saturday Night Live thing, right?
Oh, my gosh.
So did you see this skit did you ever watch it? You gotta watch it. All right, so there's so there's a skit recently with Louis C.K. So Louis C.K. Do you know who Louis C.K.
is?
You do.
Yes,
okay,
do.
Good.
I love comedians.
Marge, you know who Louis
C.K.
Oh, we gotta bring you like up to speed. All right, we're gonna
watch television.
Well, then
well, that's a problem.
We'll talk about other things. All right. So it's okay. It's all good. So in this skit with Louis C.K., Keenan and Vanessa Bayer are these two like naughty little elves, and basically Louis C.K. is like Santa, and the two elves like want to be punished, and so basically they're like, we've been really bad, Santa, we think we should be punished. So anyway, that's kind of where I was going with this. So if I've been really bad, then
I finally do connect the dots of where you're heading, sometimes I'm like, don't worry
sometimes the dots don't ever connect, so
that's
randomly go out everywhere.
That's my job, is to just keep thing moving.
Exactly. And you do. Matter of fact, by the way, thank you to everybody who has subscribed and rated and reviewed the show on iTunes. Big love, big hugs. Absolutely love that. And actually, here's a standing offer. If you subscribe and rate and review to Reinvention Radio, send me an email, steve@steveulcher.com. Let me know when the deed is done, and I will either endorse you by maybe giving you a blurb for your book, or do a short video testimonial, or reciprocate and subscribe, rate, and review to your podcast. So that is an open offer for anyone. Absolutely. And so I just want to finish this, and I want to close the loop on this thing. And when we talk about poverty and well-being, what do you think, like, in terms of the states? First of all, Minnesota took the top spot.
On
the positive side, becoming the first non-New England state to do so in over a decade. Huh. So you guys, like, dethroned the East Coast. So way to go on that. But who do you think, like, what states would you think fall in order of child well-being? And I will just throw out the top five here. So
Florida, Oklahoma.
In terms of child well-being?
No, the other side.
No, the other side. We're doing child well-being.
Still, we're on well-being. Okay.
We're on well-being.
Ooh, that's hard.
Let's see. Definitely not Florida.
Not Florida. No. Not Oklahoma.
Okay.
Colorado? Just give me one. Colorado's not in there.
Washington?
Probably somewhere in the top 10. Nope. Keep going. Two more.
We have, like...
Two more guesses.
Wyoming?
No, not Wyoming. Keep going. Two more.
You're stressing me out.
I like stress. Stress is good. We need to operate positively under stress. Go.
Illinois?
Nope, negative. Okay, here we go. So
You're asking us to pick from 50.
Well, you've got a 1 in 50 chance. I mean, that's better than... Well, actually, we're going to talk about this in the next
only lasts
show.
So long.
That is true. Okay, so New Hampshire came in second. Massachusetts came in third. Iowa came in fourth, and Vermont came in fifth. So there you go.
Those are smaller states, though.
Yes, comparatively speaking to, like, you know... California, it's a lot smaller.
Do you want a random tidbit?
You know me by now. You know I love random tidbits.
Which state is the state that the TV talk shows, Dr. Phil, Ellen, model their demographic after?
Ooh, New Jersey.
Nope.
California?
Nope.
I'm going to say Nebraska.
Nope.
Damn it. What?
It was mentioned.
Iowa?
Minnesota.
You people, you just win
Seriously.
Everything.
But I don't think that's a good thing to win.
Yeah, I'm not sure that's a good thing. And, you know, and you were on Springer, so we got to play that episode at some point.
No, I was not on Springer.
Were you the father or not?
No.
Oh, that's Maury.
No, I was on Dr. Phil talking about who goes on Springer.
All right, so Margie's here. Hey, Margie, how are you?
I'm doing great.
Welcome. All right, so
Let's
for those
give her
who don't...
a proper introduction.
Exactly. So for those who don't know Margie Grace, first of all, thank you for being here, because I know you traveled from far and wide to join us in studio. So thank you.
Where'd you come from?
20 minutes. Bankers Hill.
Bankers Hill, exactly. Which, for those who are not from the San Diego, California area, that would be a area. What do you call it? A neighborhood, right? That's like a neighborhood.
I love it. Yeah,
it's a neighborhood of San Diego.
Where is it?
Oh, God, are we really going to talk about neighborhoods?
I don't mean
it sounds
so affluent.
It's where that big tower-looky thing is.
It's west of Balboa Park.
Yeah, it's in that direction.
Well, I was just in North Park, off University.
Okay, so that would be northeast of Balboa
Park.
Not
terribly far.
Not far.
Yeah,
okay.
Not terribly
far. All right, we can move on from
the death. So, Margie, you live in Bankers Hill. Got it. Great. Thanks for joining us here. And what's the name of your book?
It is Not by Default. Deliberately Create Your Success Using Neuroscience.
Wow. Okay. So this is a book that was the creation, obviously, of many years of work and research and insight and so on. But take us back through some of those earlier, more, I guess, difficult times. Because you're smiling now, but I get the feeling that there were a lot of really hard years based on what we were able to find out about you.
I was a single mother of two boys. Very contentious divorce. Very difficult time for the boys when they were with their father and me, because they were just back and forth. And they were exposed to drugs very young. My oldest son says that he started doing drugs with his dad's friends when he was 12.
Oh, with his dad's
Lord.
Friends.
Yes.
Wow.
Who knows?
Yeah.
And, and his little brother is the one who perished from heroin and is with me now. But they had a huge, hard time. My younger son was told he had to take Ritalin or else couldn't attend school. And if you know the story of Kurt Cobain and Drug Free World, kind of tells us, you know, the statistics are there. Kids who are forced to take Ritalin because they can't sit still in the classroom, they often end up, you know, self-medicating. And look at what we're doing. You know, here, you have to take this pill because you are not normal. Something is wrong with you unless you take this pill.
So what did they think was going on with him that required the Ritalin?
ADHD. ADD, they called it back then.
So there was a diagnosis. At least they were able to somewhat identify that this was going on.
Basically, what I'm hearing from parents, and I know myself, the teachers basically diagnose it.
Mm. Because
that
of how
is
they,
outrageous.
It is. It I is. Mean, and I'm blessed the teachers. I mean, most of them are so good and have no bad intentions on any of this.
Mm-hmm.
But they've got a job to do. And some of them just, you know, take the easy way out.
Mm-hmm. So let's go back for a second here to what I think is pretty darn important. I don't want to just, you know, kind of gloss over that. Now, when your oldest son, when it came to light that he had done drugs with your ex-husband's friends at 12 years of age, did you have any knowledge of this whatsoever? How do you think it happened that you wouldn't have had knowledge?
Not back at the time. I found out after he was an adult, after he really didn't have a relationship.
So for those parents who are listening right now, what do you think you missed? And I'm not saying this to knock you or anything of that nature. I just want to be able to help other parents.
Absolutely. Me
who,
too.
Right, who may be in a similar situation. So how do you think it came to be that your son at 12 years of age was doing drugs with your ex-husband's friends? Like, where and how do you think that happened?
Well, it happened when he was with his father, you know, the back and forth
thing. So you were divorced at this point?
Yes.
And how long at that point were you divorced? Was it just a couple of years? Was it a number of years?
By the time he was 12, we were divorced 6 years.
Okay. Okay, so and he was going there every weekend or something of that nature?
Yes, and holidays. And then we actually reversed our custody arrangement so that I could get back to school because I never received. There were no deadbeat dad laws.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't receiving any help. I decided with the help of a couple of attorneys that perhaps I could go back to school, finish up, be able to make a living mm-hmm. and get by instead of being in this poverty group.
Yeah.
And but that didn't work. It backfired.
So,
they ended up staying with their dad.
Hmm.
The law did that.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I made a request that I thought could, you know, they could either grant me my wish or not.
Mm-hmm.
They ended up granting my wish, looking at me like I was a low-life mother for not wanting my sons. Well, we just wanted out of poverty.
Yeah. And they ended up granting then full custody to your ex-husband and with you getting visitation privileges?
Exactly. Wow. Yeah, yeah.
Just because you simply wanted to go to school to better your life, to provide.
For 2.5 years. That's all I wanted.
And to provide
so that I
for
could
your
provide.
Kids. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Scary. So when your kids, and at the time, what's the age difference between your oldest and your youngest?
6 years.
So they were six
yeah.
years apart.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So at the time, obviously your youngest was only six. So that
right.
would have been, you know, that would just anything would have just gone over his head. So when your 12-year-old came back after spending time with your ex-husband, what did you notice? Were there things going on? Was there a behavior? Was there an attitude?
Yes. He,
what were you
he
seeing?
He quit visiting me.
He
quit visiting me altogether. Yeah.
So when this happened, your ex-husband?
But I had no idea then.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know until he was about 25 and had cut off his relationship with his father.
Mm-hmm.
So in hindsight, he saw it as very destructive.
Yeah. Oh.
Okay. So
of course.
You know what? I just that makes me so mad.
But he was still into the mode of you do drugs to feel good. That's mm-hmm. your recreation.
Do we know what that drug was at the time when he was 12?
No.
So to the okay.
Well,
so,
actually,
I mean, are we talking
actually,
weed? Are we talking Quaaludes? Are we, I mean, pills?
You
are we
know
talking?
What? I think cocaine.
At 12?
Well, I'm not sure, but I remember him playing with a rock and chalk, sidewalk chalk, on his bike seat and chopping that chalk.
Into, like, lines and that sort of thing.
Just chopping it into powder.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I kind of thought, well, that's kind of strange, but I let it go and said, oh, it's just a kid
mm-hmm.
playing with, yeah.
Wow,
and
all right.
And he was not even 12. By then, he was only 8 or 9 at that
yeah.
time. So he saw this.
All right, we're going to have to take a break here. And if you want to join in on the conversation, the number is 866-977-2346. And you'll hit number 1 when you dial in. We're going to talk about how you lost your youngest son and what we can do here insofar as, boy, this whole epidemic is concerned. So more with Margie Grace and Reinvention Radio right after this.
We'll be right back. You were born to do one amazing thing, but most people spend a lifetime trying to identify what it is. If you're at a job you don't like or are unemployed, if you're in a state of transition or just can't shake that nagging feeling that you were meant and made to do something extraordinary, the Reinvention Workshop is exactly what you need. Led by award-winning self-help author Steve Ulcher, the Reinvention Workshop will forever change your life. The Reinvention Workshop takes you step by step through Steve's proven formula that has helped so many get on the right path and be clear about what they were born to do. Take the first step for realizing the life you deserve and desire by visiting TheReinventionWorkshop.com today. No more delays, no more denial. Reconnect with your true self. Learn to live with purpose and conviction and become who you were born to be. The world is waiting for you. What are you waiting for? Log on to TheReinventionWorkshop.com. That's TheReinventionWorkshop.com.
And now, back to Reinvention Radio with your host, Steve Ulcher.
All right, welcome back to Reinvention Radio. Man, just absolutely sobering. All right, so, Margie, let's talk about this.
Okay.
You, at what age did your youngest son overdose?
He was 32.
He was 30. Okay.
Oh,
so,
yeah, he's, you know, I mean, but this is encroaching into such young ages that.
And heroin is what killed him in the end.
Heroin, yeah.
Yeah. So, and I mean, you look at talented people, right? I mean, like Philip Seymour Hoffman, right, is a perfect example. And then there are other very, very talented people who, you know, you would think these are super smart people who know better than to stick a fucking needle in their arm. Mm-hmm. And
Even
the first time. How do you think that happens? Is it just, I mean, is it literally a peer thing and you just have to be so aware of where your children are, who they're spending time with, and ultimately, it comes from, I mean, how do you think it happened in hindsight?
You can't do a lot about who they hang around with. I think it's a matter of low self-esteem. Even if you've given them all the tools to have high self-esteem, they will get with their peers and, you know, boyfriend, whatever, and things can knock them down to where they feel inadequate in life. Mm-hmm. And they do anyway because of look at the world. I mean, look at, you know, and I'm not a pessimist about I think we're going to be okay. However, I think we better get aware and enlightened.
So talk to me about, I mean, what do you know about heroin? Because I have tried various drugs over the years, and if you listen to the show, you know I admit that readily, some of which I very much enjoy, and some of which I could never do again because of various genetic reasons, like mushrooms, for instance.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh, I haven't heard of mushrooms.
You haven't heard the mushrooms? Oh, my God, mushrooms are great. I mean, I love mushrooms, but I am genetically, like, predisposed to having super, and you'll appreciate this, Marty, I have super low neurotransmitter levels, like my oxytocins and my, what are all those?
Serotonin.
There's like serotonins and there's like five of them, right?
Melatonin.
Right. So there's basically like a 0 to 100 chart for all of these oxytocin type thingies. And anyway, like the average person is in the 50, 60, 70 range or maybe even higher. My numbers are like in the teens. Like literally like teens and low single digits. So when I do mushrooms, like it just blows me up because I just get like bombarded with this rush.
It's hard to believe this, Steve, because you're so energetic and you're brilliant.
Can you imagine?
Move along. Yeah, I can't. I don't get that.
So evidently I turn into, I mean, you know, I mean, I have a lot of fun, but evidently for those that I'm with, it's not as much fun. But my point only
but
being.
But you're married.
I am.
For better
18,
than I am.
For 18 years, actually. We just celebrated 18 years.
Congratulations.
Yes, that is definitely an accomplishment to her. Totally. So, all right. So here's what I'm trying to understand. So what I'm trying to understand is what is the difference from your understanding between heroin and some of these other drugs? Why do people get so, I mean, you just go down the rabbit hole and you can't come back. What's your understanding?
I don't know, but I do know that once you do go down that rabbit hole, you'd better join a Narcotics Anonymous group and make them your life. Mm-hmm. I have a cousin who did that, very prominent lawyer, and ended up, you know, doing that. And now he's for 30 years been sober.
Wow.
And that's his life, is his group.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so take us back then through that period of time. Did you find your son? How did that all go down? What happened?
He was living in another town in Colorado with his girlfriend and her little five-year-old boy that my son adopted in mm-hmm. his own right and loved to death. And they were living in a motel, getting ready to move into a house with a yard. He was so proud of it. I was finally going to go and visit him after sort of a little bit of a distancing that I took because I knew I couldn't handle him anymore.
Yeah.
And I was about to go visit over in Glenwood Springs, Colorado. And a week before or 2 weeks before I was going to go, I got the phone call from his father.
From his father.
Yeah. Yeah. It was really crazy.
So did that.
His girlfriend finally called his father because I turn my phone off. My phone's off in the morning until mm-hmm. I meditate and do all my stuff and get ready for my day.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah.
Yeah. And so when you look back then on that period of time, were there any warning signs at all that you couldn't, others identify?
Didn't know that it was heroin that he was involved in. I mm-hmm. knew that he had drug issues in the past. It was mostly to do with marijuana and drinking. Were mm-hmm. his big downfalls.
Yeah.
Speed was another one, methamphetamine.
Sure. And your oldest.
What did the girlfriend, how was he able to do that drug? That's a major serious.
She was, she's an addict too.
Okay. How long ago was this?
That was 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, my friend, one of the guys I go to church with, his son.
Everybody knows somebody.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, it is common as can be.
I can't remember what happened. Oh, he got busted for trying to sell it.
Mm-hmm.
So then that kind of scared him straight, and he went into a treatment center. Mm-hmm. Then he went into Brother Benno's downtown.
Okay.
And then he moved into another house for mm-hmm. recovery.
Yeah.
And it's... Geez, maybe a year and a half, 2 years now.
It goes on
saved
and on. It doesn't
him.
Seem to end. But
it's saved. He's good. He's clean.
Yeah.
He's clean. And
yeah, thank
but
God.
But the father was like, what do you do? How do you,
right.
you know? And the kid was in his early 20s.
So is your older son, is he still involved with drugs to the best of your knowledge
at all?
Not at all.
Not at all.
At all. Did that scare him straight?
Both my sons went to prison for 2.5 years.
What did they do?
And why were they in there?
Yeah.
Drugs.
So they got caught selling drugs.
Yes.
And they both
mm-hmm.
went to prison for that.
Yeah, at different times.
Mm-hmm.
So mom got to travel across Colorado for 5 years visiting two different sons in prison at different times.
Yeah. And and so coming out of prison then, was that sort of his wake-up call for your older son?
My older son actually had a good program that he went into right out of prison.
Mm-hmm.
And it taught him to think positively. And then my older son discovered his passion in life, which is race car driving.
Mm, mm-hmm.
And he started to work. He had an auto body shop, and he lost everything. And then went to prison, came out, and went to an auto body shop and started detailing cars after mm-hmm. owning a shop.
Mm-hmm.
And hooked up with the buddies there that were all racing their cars at a local NASCAR track. And he just wanted to be a driver, and he started socking his money away. And
so, kind of, that's
cool.
Yeah, it speaks to the importance of having your children into something that is obviously productive.
But we can't be telling our kids what they should do. They need to get in their own heart and figure out what it is they like to do.
I was just having this conversation yesterday because my daughter is going to be a sophomore. And she's the kind of girl that she loves dogs. She's my lover girl.
Mm-hmm.
And she loves her friends. And, I'm like, you know what, girl? I am going to get you started in she's really talented with like guitar, and so she wanted to try the ukulele. Well, I'm getting into her class. And somebody said, well, you can't make her. I said, you know what I can do as a mother? I can expose her to something.
Yes.
And then maybe she'll say, you know what, Mom? It's not the ukulele. It's the this I want to do. But if I didn't start her, she would just make her whole life her friends.
And that's the problem with impoverished kids. They don't have those opportunities.
Yeah.
And so they have no clue. So they go and take an aptitude test based on the skills and that they already have and know.
Yeah.
And they have no chance.
Yeah. And again, that's where we started the conversation, just talking about the poverty line, because you can't sign your kids up for guitar lessons and ukulele lessons and theater and science and all of these things when, you know, just putting bread on the table is obviously the priority.
Full focus for the day.
Yeah. So, but I do have a question though, because in hindsight, you know, look, both kids sold drugs.
Yeah.
Both kids took drugs.
Yeah.
Both kids ended up in prison.
Mm-hmm.
After they were released, one went down a path that said, "I'm never going to get myself in that situation again."
Right.
And one clearly couldn't keep themselves out of that life.
Yeah.
What do you think was the biggest difference?
Well, my younger son got out of prison and came to live with me and didn't have any support program to teach him positive thinking and, you know, discover your passion, nothing like that, how to build your skills in ways that top professionals do. And those are the things that I teach now, because I saw my older son did that, became a champion race car driver of a super stock car after only 4 years of ever getting behind a wheel.
It keeps him alive.
And now he's racing super stocks and also a modified for somebody else's team. And I mean, he's just, that's his love.
Yeah, well, when we come back, we'll take one more break here, and then when we come back, we're going to talk about your current work, and you've got your book, Not By Default.
Yes.
And we're going to talk about that, and it's all neuroscience-based, and, you know, it should be pretty interesting. So I look forward to hearing about your current work and how you've really leveraged these very, very difficult times and almost parlayed them into a way in which you can help others.
And only
forward.
Because I learned to use it myself.
Yeah. So I got to tell you, it's pretty, it's some heavy stuff here, but it's stuff we got to talk about. So we'll be right back with more Reinvention Radio right after this.
You were born to do one amazing thing, but most people spend a lifetime trying to identify what it is. If you're in a job you don't like or are unemployed, if you're in a state of transition or just can't shake that nagging feeling that you were meant and made to do something extraordinary, then the Reinvention Workshop is exactly what you need. Led by award-winning self-help author Steve Olscher, the Reinvention Workshop will forever change your life. The Reinvention Workshop takes you step-by-step through Steve's proven formula that has helped so many people get on the right path and clear about what they were born to do. Take the first step to realizing the life you deserve and desire by visiting thereinventionworkshop.com today. No more delays. No more denial. Reconnect with your true self. Learn to live with purpose and conviction and become who you were born to be. The world is waiting for you. What are you waiting for? Log on to thereinventionworkshop.com today. That's thereinventionworkshop.com.
And now, back to Reinvention Radio with your host, Steve Olscher.
All right, welcome back. And all right, so
happy time.
Happy time, right? I know. This is like,
yay.
All right, I grabbed my box of Kleenex. My tears are gone.
You've been there, done that.
And so did you.
Yes.
Right? Because on the break, we were talking about how, you know, you were kind of in that place yourself where life wasn't awesome for you. I mean, I'm sure there were, you know, dark moments, as we talked about. But how did you flip the switch? I mean, how did you make the decision that it's like, I have got to get out of this state of mind, and there's going to be something better.
You know how people say the glass is half empty and then, or it's half full?
I prefer to drink whatever's in the glass, by the way.
There you go. And then refill it.
Did I mention my own liquor.com?
Yes, you did.
Okay, sorry.
I told somebody yesterday about that. Anyway, it's, okay, that line, if you have an imaginary line on a glass, half empty or half full, how do you get yourself just a teensy bit over that line to change your perception, you know, your whole perception of life?
Well, at the time that all of this...
Because we don't even see ourselves do it or hear ourselves say it.
Right. And I had worked my way up gradually. I heard, read Norman Vincent Peale's book on positive thinking. I was, practicing all that stuff. But I was still a pretty negative person. I still thought life was such a struggle, and it was always a, there was always a battle going on with my middle child, my son, who died. And so after he died, and I held a memorial service, and the day after, I just threw the covers over my head and said, I'm not getting up. There's, what's the point?
What's there to live for? But what was the trigger? I mean, so were you watching Jerry and you just decided you can't go down that path?
I told you I don't watch TV.
You know, Jerry, I got to tell you, Jerry has probably...
Oh, Jerry Seinfeld?
Well, yeah, that guy. But
I'll watch him.
Yeah.
But I think Springer has actually saved a lot of people. They don't give him credit for all the people that looked at the show and said, there's no fucking way in hell that I'm going to live my life like that. And then they, became huge success stories.
I am living my life like that right now, and I don't like what I see.
Yeah, you're that person.
Yeah.
All right.
Huh.
So, okay. All right. So you weren't watching Jerry when the switch went on, but something happened where you pulled the sheets back, and just got yourself out of bed. And you said, I've got to do something here that's positive, which brought you into your current work. But again, was it because there are a lot of people who are out there who just are in that state of mind of take me out of my misery.
Right.
I was there. I get it. Believe me, I was on suicide watch and I get it because, you get to that point where there's no light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah.
So
what
did you do? What was the transformation like?
Just before my son died, I had been online and kind of looking at some spiritual stuff and spiritual leaders, and I ran into Janet Atwood, who is the creator of the Passion Test.
Yeah.
Okay. I know Janet well.
Yep. Oh, you do?
I do. She spoke on a couple of my stages.
Okay.
Awesome.
I'm a certified facilitator in all three of her programs.
No, I won't hold that against you. Okay, cool.
Nice. So anyway, I was scrolling through thinking I've got to get a different job. I had been a realtor, had done really well in the mountains, and I had a very affluent life, actually, in between things. And then I ended up single in Denver, moved down from the mountains. And I had been working because real estate wasn't doing anything, and it still isn't in the mountains for a lot of people. Anyway, I was sitting there scrolling through, wondering if I heard from Monster.com or ADP or any of the places I was applying online with my resume over and over, because I had been working at Eddie Bauer and Costco. And I don't know about anybody else, but I can't make a living on minimum wage.
Yeah.
Sorry, folks. Yeah. And then they don't give you 40 hours. And if they did, you'd be dead trying to run your butt off for them. So anyway, sorry, corporate world. But that's how I see it.
Yeah. No, you're just speaking what everybody else is thinking. Believe me.
I think so. So I'm scrolling through and I see the Passion Test. And I thought, well, that's funny, because my whole reflection on my sons, the difference between my two sons, is that one discovered his passion and he made it and he has a good life and he loves his life, and the other never discovered his passion.
Yeah.
And that could have made a huge difference for him.
And so you kind of felt the same way, like you had never discovered yours.
Well, no, I loved doing real estate, and before that I taught medical billing, so I was pretty okay, but I sure didn't want to work in retail, especially at my age. I pushing 60, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
So I went ahead and online on Janet's show and watched the Passion Test and saw it all happen, and I thought, well, I want to do that. And then I see in the right banner that you can become certified at this.
Yeah.
So I signed up. And that was history, no more Costco and Eddie Bauer.
Yay.
Other than shopping.
You're right.
And then you wrote your book, Not by Default.
Yes.
When did you write it?
I wrote it from 2013 to 2014.
Okay, so where can people find you? Since this is the last segment, I want to make sure that they can find you online.
Yeah. Now, the website in my book is wrong. I'm phasing that one out. So they can find me at margiesgrace.com, M-A-R-G-I-E-S. Grace.com.
Nice. My daughter's middle name is Grace.
Oh, well, yeah. Okay, it was my grandmother's name.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and the book is available on Amazon and all of those
it is,
fine
and
places
at
as
other
well.
Booksellers, supposedly, too, but I haven't seen them anywhere. That's another story.
Okay, so we don't have a lot of time. It went by so quickly.
Yeah.
What is the neuroscience part of it?
Okay, neuroscientists recently discovered that if you think positive thought, if you think a negative thought, first of all, you're going to notice. You feel it.
Yeah.
And when you notice a negative thought, you need to flip the switch and think of something positive in your life. And the neuroscientists use words like peace and love and joy, loyalty, honesty, things like that. And they found that people in the study, they actually overrode they would watch the negative neurons line up and create a neural pathway from one part of the brain to the other.
I know that's true.
Yes, it is true.
It is true.
Yeah, and I learned this on a conference call with the neuroscientists who Janet Atwood had a conference call with her facilitators, and she had this guy on. This is where I learned it. So you think a negative thought, and you create this neural pathway, and then you start thinking a positive thought, and you override the negative pathway. And if you do that at three or more times, it will change the chemistry in your brain, your whole demeanor, everything changes.
Well, and you know, some people look at those positive affirmation people as silly, but there's truth, man. Otherwise,
there is.
You let a sneaky little fear or worry turns it into a thought and it becomes a reality.
Yeah. And really, I think what we're finding out is that we are the creators of our world, that really physically this is an illusion, and there's a whole lot of esoteric stuff that I've been looking into, and I'm finding it from experience that it's true. I've studied A Course in Miracles for many years.
I love A Course in Miracles.
Yeah. All right, so in conclusion here, all right, so one final tip. So if you're a parent and you're struggling to get your kids to where they need to be, their kids are struggling with drug addiction, what do you tell that parent?
Catch them early if you can. Get them, you know, to look at all the different things that one of them might become their passion. Help them to learn how to think positively. And then I teach a third thing, how to develop your skill building, develop that more quickly so that you don't get frustrated when you are learning a new thing and end up giving it up.
Really helpful. So again, the book is Not By Default: Deliberately Create Your Success Using Neuroscience, and I think ultimately the takeaway here is you just got to be in your kids' life. You got to understand who they are, what they're doing, because drug addiction is real. And as we all know, it has taken some of the most talented people to ever have walked this planet away from us. So, again, a lot of really positive stuff here. And I know it's, you know, kind of this heavy subject, but ultimately drug addiction is real. And we've got to take this thing, you know, just head on.
It's gotten real bad.
Yeah, absolutely. So Margie's Grace, M-A-R-G-I-E-S, grace.com is the site. And again, the book is Not By Default. So thank you so much for being here. And
thank
I know
you.
That, you know, it's probably been an incredible go after having lost your son to drugs. So thank you. God, you're still here.
Do.
Yep, keep up the amazing work. We'll be back
with
more Reinvention Radio at another day. Talk soon.
You just got dismantled. Thanks for listening to Reinvention Radio. For more information about the show and your host, Steve Olsher, visit reinventionradio.com.